Welcome to the Aquarimax audio show with Russ and Kim. We provide information on all kinds of aquarium-related topics.
This is episode 262, recorded August 10th, 2015.
Who do we got this week?
Just a couple people. We have Matt in Perth, Western Australia, and Joe in Hudsonville, Michigan.
Cool. Oh, and Tiki's joining us.
Oh, yes. Tiki is sitting here, too.
She's got the gecko on it.
Go, gecko, go.
We actually set up a naturalistic vivarium for Tiki. She'd just been in, in a vivarium, but with branches and cocoa fiber and stuff and fake leaves for a little while because we wanted to set up a live vivarium, but we wanted to do it after we moved, and then things had to settle a while first. But now she's in a live vivarium.
We just put the substrate in the other day, and we put the plants in today.
Yep, so and ideally we would let the microphone sit there and populate, but we're going to let it happen while she's in there. So it's already got microphone in there, but yeah, it'll be fun.
You put the isopods and the springtails in.
Yeah, that's the microphone.
Yeah.
Okay, so anyway, there we go.
Should we go to Matt?
Yes.
Okay. Says, hello, Aquarimax. So, my Tunzi 9001 protein skimmer decided it did not need to stick to the side of the aquarium anymore. The part that snaps into the magnet broke, so the skimmer kept falling into the water. As this seemed to be a permanent problem, I decided to risk it and buy a cheap protein skimmer from my local fish shop. The Tunzi cost $130 and is supposed to be a higher class of skimmer. This Resun SK300 cost me $60, and so far I have been more impressed by it than the more expensive Tunzi?
T-U-N-Z. You can pronounce it however you want.
The Resun skimmer attaches to the side of the glass using an adjustable screw. The advantage I have with that is it's much easier to adjust the height, and once I have a good height, the screw attaches the skimmer securely. Tunzi always used to be a little flimsy in its connection. Plus, as the magnet was so strong, I'd have to put a lot of pressure on it to adjust the height. This pressure would then be released in a big splash, removing a fair amount of seawater from the aquarium. Not good. With the Resun, I can adjust the height using a dial at the top of the skimmer. This is fantastic, as it removes the need to physically move the skimmer to the current water height. It is so much easier and more precise than the Tunzi. The other advantage I have gotten from the Resun skimmer is the noises it makes are higher in pitch. This means my custom earplugs block them out better. Sleep earplugs are not good at blocking low frequencies, but do well with medium to high frequency sounds. The moral of the story is, don't always assume cheaper is lower quality. It is a mistake I have made in the past, and this time I am pleasantly surprised at the results I am getting from the cheaper product. I think the better skimmer is slowing the algae growth, which is good.
Yeah. I love that. It's nice to hear when something works, and it works for less. And it is good, you know, to get what you pay for is true to a certain extent in some cases, but there are cases like this where it doesn't hold true, and it's nice to know.
Yeah.
So, yeah, thank you for demonstrating that. I would consider that a good tip for all aquariumists out there who are looking at protein skimmers.
Matt also says, I saw an interesting article on a science website that I frequent about the benefits of watching fish. And he sent that to us, so
and
we can
we
put that
put
up,
that
you guys
on the
can
page
read it.
Too.
You know, not that you need any more convincing to watch them, but it's good to know that...
Good to be justified in doing so.
Well, and we all know that it's relaxing and it's peaceful and it's good for your blood pressure, so, you know, you can share it with your friends. He sent us a picture, too, which we can put up also. He says, I saw this amazing aquarium picture online recently, too. I attached the photo. How cool would it be to own this? And it's pretty amazing. It's like a big counter with a sink in it, you know, like a kind of a modern-looking kitchen sink. It looks like it's... Are those stove burners on it? But the whole block, the counter block underneath the actual counter surface is an aquarium.
Yeah, I think those are stove burners. It's got stove burners, it's got a sink and stuff, and lots of counter space, but there's this aquarium under it, so check it out. We'll see if
it's
we can...
It's really cool. It has a little blurb about it. What does it say?
Yeah.
So this fully functioning kitchen countertop has a filtered aquarium as the base. The piece designed by Robert Kolinick is hydraulically operated to lift the countertop so that the aquarium can be easily tended to. How cool is that? That's pretty darn cool.
It is, because I've seen, you know, countertop aquariums before. There was one in a pet store we used to go to in Hawaii, for example. Mm-hmm. It was cool, but it looked like it would be really hard to get into the aquarium and do stuff. But this one, that, I mean,
they fixed
it's just the soul of simplicity in mm-hmm. terms of what the aquarius has to do. I mean, I'm sure the hydraulics are complicated, but using them isn't. So that's really awesome.
Yeah.
I would love that. That'd be a fun aquarium to have.
That'd be really neat.
Probably also has a really easy way to do water changes, I bet, too.
I'm sure it's plumbed since it's right there on the sink.
Yeah. That's cool.
Okay.
Thank
Should
you,
we
Matt.
Go to Joe in Michigan? No,
oh,
except
you
just changed the screen to Insect Lore Ladybug Land.
That was an accident. Okay.
Oh, where'd
it
go?
I'm trying to change it to this.
Okay, here we go. It says, hi, Russ and Kelly, Joe in Hudsonville, Michigan here again. I have attached a picture of my bushy-nosed Placo helping out with the algae on the Anubias. Unfortunately, I think he was hiding more than helping because he spent more time on the underside of the leaves.
You can see him hanging out there. We'll put
so
that
we
picture
can put
up.
That up too. I'm interested in shrimp for that tank. You guys asked what fish are in that tank. I have a couple of Endler's Live Bearers, Emerald Iras, Boras, Cardinal Tetras, and Glowlight Tetros. And he says, notice the common theme? I am going for colorful. Then the bushy-nosed Placo is there to help clean up. I'm all ears for shrimp suggestions for this tank, as I'm always open to help keeping clean, and I think my girls would like shrimp. Thanks again for the great podcast, Joe.
Well, thank you, Joe. Mm-hmm. And I hope the bristlenose does end up helping out some. But let's talk about shrimp. I think you'll get some differing opinions on this. There are those on one side who will say, don't keep shrimp with fish at all, because it will change their behavior. They'll become more secretive.
The shrimp, not the fish.
The shrimp will become more secretive. The fish will eat some of the shrimp, and the shrimp will be uncomfortable. You will hear other people who will say, now they're fine, you can put them in there with the fish. And then you'll find some people in the middle. And I would say, for maximum comfort of the shrimp, they really do best without fish. That said, in the past, I have kept shrimp with small tetras, such as cardinal tetras and glowlight tetras. I've also kept them with the guppies, which, as you know, are very similar to Endler's live bearers. And they have survived, not only survived, but they have sustained a population over time, for years. I mean, they're breeding, and the babies are growing up, not all of them obviously, but some of the babies are growing up so that they can maintain a population there. As long as the plant growth and other hiding places are sufficient and the fish are well fed, some of the shrimp will probably survive, grow up, continue to breed, and you'll have a sustaining population of, you know, some of the hardier shrimp like red cherry shrimp. If you're going to try things like crystal red shrimp or something, I don't think that would work. They're quite a bit smaller and more sensitive. I don't think that would work, but I think red cherry shrimp would probably work. You could probably also do an Amano shrimp or two. They would, they won't breed in a tank like that, but you could probably keep a couple. And you certainly wouldn't get as many shrimp, and you probably wouldn't see as many shrimp because they would be intimidated by the fish to some extent and hide more and so on. But you would see some of the shrimp some of the time, and they would help with the algae to some degree. If you were to convert the shrimp over to just a shrimp tank, you'd probably find that you wouldn't see any algae on the leaves eventually, as the shrimp, you know, mm-hmm. the increase in population, they can keep a tank just spanking clean, no algae at all, and you don't need to feed them a lot. And especially if you don't feed them a lot, they'll eat a lot of the algae. Anyway, I've done it, kind of works, but you won't get the maximum bang for your buck in terms of shrimp visibility or shrimp reproduction, but it would probably work. Let's see, anything else I can say on that? I haven't experimented with lots of other types. I have done some with ghost shrimp. If you wanted to go a cheaper route, you could try putting a few ghost shrimp in there and see how they act and see how the fish interact with them, although the ghost shrimp will probably not clean up the algae as well. and they might be more antagonistic towards the fish, and they certainly won't breed very well. I was able to get ghost shrimp to produce a little bit. I got a few babies out of them when I tried to breed ghost shrimp like years ago. How long ago was that? I don't even know. When we lived in that 400 North house. How long ago was that?
Well, we moved out of there in 2004. So
10, 11 years ago?
Yeah.
Yeah. The first type of shrimp I attempted to breed was ghost shrimp, and they reproduced in there a little bit, but only got like two or three babies. So they're nowhere near as easy to get to reproduce as like red cherry shrimp, because the babies are planktonic initially. Mm-hmm. And they bump into stuff, and the parents eat them, and bumping into stuff can kill them. And of course, getting eaten by their parents kills them. And here comes
and
an airplane.
And the jet going over our house.
Yes, we live next to an Air Force base now, so that's an occasional inevitability. Anyway, so shrimp. Yes, the ghost shrimp. You could try that, but those would be the caveats with those. Red cherry shrimp would probably survive, breed a little bit, but you wouldn't get as many, and they might, you know, act more nervous and so on. So, yeah.
There we go.
I think those are your options. Some people might talk about keeping a Singapore wood shrimp in there, but I don't think that would help you much with the algae, and I think some of the fish might bug it, especially when it molted, because it's big, it's hard to hide, and fish will attack it. I got to tell you the story of red cherry shrimp and Corydoras catfish.
Tell us the story.
I had some, I'm trying to remember what species they were of Corys that I had. It wasn't Paleotis, it was Punctatus, Corydoras punctatus. I had some of those in a 20-gallon tank. And like a school of five or six of them in there with neon tetras, I think it was. And I remember looking in there, I had red cherry shrimp, but they were the wild types, because in Hawaii, where we lived at the time, the wild types were everywhere, and you could get them for 10 cents or 5 cents a piece at the pet store. They would just go pull them out of the local stream, because they have been released there. There are feral populations of them all over the place. So you just go and pick up a bunch and toss them in. And they were good algae control. So I had a breeding population of those going, and I put these Corydoras punctatus in there. And at one point, they had been in there, and the population had been doing well and everything of the shrimp, and the punctatus were doing fine too. And I looked and saw something going on, looked a little closer, and I saw a Corydoras punctatus was bugging a shrimp that had just barely molted, and then slurped it up, just like a piece of spaghetti.
Wow.
And it was pretty much gone. It was kind of...
It was snack.
Yeah, it was a snack. It was sort of disconcerting. And that will happen with the... And it looked surprisingly, you know... It looked deceptively too large for it to fit in the Corey's mouth, but because it was so soft and having just molted, it was very soft. So it was probably like slurping up shrimpy jello.
Wow.
And it... You know, so things like that will happen. The ones, while they're molting, if they don't have a good place to hide, even smaller fish will attack them, and fish that you didn't think would be able to swallow them probably can at that point. So I'm not saying a cardinal tetra can swallow an adult shrimp whole, but it would be able to get bigger babies than it otherwise would when the babies are molting. Okay. So make sure you have some hiding places, and that will help.
Sounds good.
All right. I think that's all for this week, except for one thing.
What?
I did post last week's podcast just on Monday. That's today. And you'll be hearing this by Wednesday, probably, hopefully.
So you get two this week.
But I put the pictures of the short video clip of the stingrays that we saw, the baby stingrays that were born at the Loveland Living Planet Aquarium that we visited a couple of weeks ago. Mm-hmm. So you can check those out. They're fun.
Sounds good.
So until next time,
may the fish
be with you. Thank you for listening to this edition of the Aquarimax Audio Show. For additional episodes, please visit aquarimax.com. To leave comments or questions that could be featured on an upcoming podcast, leave a message at 801-477-0629. or email us at info@aquariumx.com.